Fred Film Radio, Karlovy Vary International Film Festival, Czech Republic.
Fred Film Radio, I'm Matt Micucci from the 2018 Karlovy Vary International Film Festival, and I'm very pleased to be joined by director Jan Gebert, who is here with the documentary When the War Comes. Thank you very much for joining us.
Hello.
So, first of all, I saw this film at One World Film Festival in Prague a few months ago, and I thought it was amazing. It actually ended up being my favorite, probably, that I saw. So it's great to actually catch up with you here, because I wasn't able to interview you back then. Mm-hmm. But just for the benefit of our listeners who are not familiar with the film, I mean, the obligatory question is, would you like to tell us a little bit about the film? And
okay, sure. Well, from the very start, I'm going to give you my interpretation. For me, it's a film about the rise of fascism. Well, it's a story about a paramilitary group in Slovakia. But for me, it was interesting because these people, for me, they represented something like a model society that reflects all the tensions and all the tendencies that we see in current Europe. The rise of authoritarian regimes and call for the strong hand government. All these elements I saw in this one single group, and for me it was something like the Lord of the Flies kind of story, where children actually create their own society with their own rules. And it reminds of, many totalitarian regimes of the 20th century. So I focused on these mechanisms that reveal how fascism or totalitarian regimes are born. That was my main angle.
Mm. More specifically, though, what is it that you film?
Yeah, well, it's a story about a paramilitary group in Slovakia. It's a group that is led by a 22-year-old guy that was trained in Russia. He was trained by the Cossacks and the Russian special forces. And most of the members of his organizations are teenagers or very, very young people. They are totally out of control of the state. They have units all around the country. And they are basically against democracy, against the EU, against NATO. So they are something like a fifth column within the EU.
That's interesting. Right off the bat, the first thing that comes to my head is they're so young.
Yeah.
Right. That's pretty shocking.
Yeah, it was pretty shocking. Like, the youth is very shocking. And also, like, the profile of those people is very interesting because most of them are very middle-class people. Yeah. And they do not match the stereotypes that you would expect from the nationalists or from the extremists. You know, they do not match the stereotypes of how we imagined these people in the 90s. These people are usually educated. They look nice. They do not have like serious economic problems. They do not have problems to get a girlfriend. You know, they are not like stereotypically like what we imagine them. So it revealed to me that these ideas that were somewhere on the outskirts of the society until recently now made it to the mainstream, made it to the middle class. And this is one of the most disturbing things that I discovered about that group, one of the most interesting things about them whatsoever, you know, because it's not like the guns, it's more like their nice faces that disturbed me. They look like my friends from high school.
Just everyday people. But I'm curious as well, like when you talk about middle class too, yeah. It's almost like, and this could be just my own interpretation, but just from my memories of being that age, like the form of rebellion, the highest form of rebellion for me was to rebel against my parents, whatever class they were, right? So is that kind of, does that come into it? Is that reading completely wrong?
No. It's a good point. I was thinking about why don't they rebel against, you know, establishment or against the rules or something like that. I figured out that they are also rebelling against something. They are rebelling against democracy. Yeah. They are rebelling for traditions. And they even are more traditional, I would say, than their grandmother. Mm-hmm. You know, so this is their very funny rebellion. Whereas me or you were maybe part of some movement that was struggling to gain more freedom for the society or for yourself. These people are fighting to get less freedom for themselves and for the society. It's very strange. But that's what we, it's just a It's just something that we see all around us now.
I want to ask you so many questions about this film, and maybe we'll run a little bit over with this interview, actually, but there's something we can help. The first thing, obviously, is I'd like to know how you met these people.
Well, I discovered, I read an article, a very short article. It was basically a list of paramilitary organizations in Eastern Europe that were somehow connected to Russia. And there was a name of a group in Slovakia, and it kind of surprised me that in Slovakia, very close to my home, in the middle of the EU, you have such group that is like fifth column, something like Putin's fifth column over there. And I just immediately realized that this was like something very, very new, and this was something that I would want to make a film about. Even though I did not see the characters in real, even before I did any kind of research, I immediately knew that this is it. And I contacted them on Facebook. It's easy to find them because they usually wear uniforms. So if you put there the name, 10 people pop up, but you choose the one in the uniform. And then I wrote them, and they replied kind of at a very short notice. And they were kind of cautious, but still they were kind of open. The leader, he's a smart guy, and he knows that he should be or pretend to be friends or open for the media. So I kind of exploited this, and he also liked the idea that he would be filmed by a crew because it's something that that helps him build his authority in front of his mates, because, there is a crew following me. There's going to be a big film about me. HBO is in production. It's going to be big. And, it makes him more important in the eyes of his fellows.
So he looked at this as a real opportunity, right?
Probably, but still he was very cautious, and he was ever more cautious. More and more he was cautious about the scenes that would be filmed, and he was very cautious about his privacy. And this was something that I really wanted to show, the human face of a fascist, because that's something that is very intriguing, and I think very important for the film to show that these people are just like you, or just like me in a way, and that you can, in a way, imagine yourself in his shoes. That in certain conditions it might be you or your brother that might be doing it, and I wanted to show them as human as possible, as human as they are. And he was very cautious, he didn't allow me like to film family stuff and so on. So it was a constant kind of fight, but on the other hand, he was not embarrassed or he was not cautious enough to show scenes that I would be embarrassed of. He let me film the moments where he bans elections in his organizations, where he substitutes names by numbers, and he writes down the numbers on a yellow ribbon, which is reminiscent to Nazism. And he was not embarrassed, he was even proud to show that. So, in a way, I realized that this guy has a very different concept of what is right and what is wrong from me.
Yes, you've definitely got some really juicy stuff in that documentary, yes. Let's just say that. Mm. But so I mentioned at the start of this interview that I loved the documentary. And one of the reasons why I loved the documentary is, apart from the things that it talks about and obviously your objectives, is the way in which it is filmed. Mm-hmm. Because I remember watching it and I remember laughing so much at the absurdity that sometimes was almost endearing. Because you see these things happening and you kind of laugh, progressively you laugh less. I think that humor kind of comes from the fact that you the way you filmed them was almost like non-judgmentally in a way.
I did not want to judge them by any comments or by a voiceover, but still, I think my commentary is in the story itself. The way I structured it, that it starts like a story of funny guys that are clumsy, awkward, and you might laugh at them, but in the very end you see out of the blue you have a politician that rose from that group, and a very dangerous politician that is able to really conceal all of his ideology and all his dark sides, all the dark things about him under the facade of a nice guy. So well, I like, for instance, the film Barry Lyndon of Stanley Kubrick, where you can identify and sympathize with the protagonist at the beginning, but maybe from the half of the film, which is a very long film, you lose the sympathy for them, for him. And I wanted to achieve something similar, that at first you underestimate the guy, you might find him funny, and you might even identify with him, but from maybe half of the film you lose the sympathies, and in the end he's just disgusting, you know, for the way he talks, for the way he combs his hair, you know, whatever. So that was my intention, that in the end it would feel the seriousness of the image that is in front of you, and it might even make you think about yourself, about your laughing at first, because that's what I wanted maybe to achieve, that people would think about, you know, those people around them that they might consider funny or not dangerous enough, but actually they can turn out to be very dangerous for the whole society, and out of the blue something very serious rises from it.
So how has the situation progressed since then?
Well, it progresses so fast. You know, if we filmed it for another half a year, we would maybe have the story more clear, because this guy he put away his uniform. The leader, he put away his uniform, and now he dresses only in a suit. And not only this, he became friends with the presidential candidate of Slovakia, and they are very good friends now. And this is a guy that would prefer also the drift from the EU towards the East, and he's not secretive anymore about his connections to Russia. And on his Facebook, just today I saw a picture where he's next to the head of the motorcycle gang, Night Wolves, and he's there hand in hand with the European leader of that organization. So I think he can progress very fast and make it very, very big and very, very far in the politics if he would keep the speed that he has now.
Oh, I'm not going to ask anything whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. I don't even think that's really the point of the documentary, at least from the way I saw it. It's more like, you know, just a very universal story, like you said. And that's why I want to ask you my last question, because we did run over and I don't want to.
Okay.
So this film has been kind of screening for a while now. Right. I believe it's premiered in Amsterdam, is that correct?
In Berlin, at Berlinale.
Berlinale, so yeah. So it's been around for a while. Mm. And so it's been to different countries.
Right, yeah.
What is the audience reaction? I'm also thinking about questions that you were asked, or even like I said, that I laughed. Because it was funny at some moments, especially near the beginning when you're still getting used to it. I mean, what did you feel the reaction was from the audience, different parts of the world?
Well, it's a different kind of reaction. Some people tell me that they have, some people told me that I saw them after the film, a couple of days after. They told me that they had dreams with the protagonists, which is very strange. Immediately after the screening, some people tell me that it might be propaganda for somebody, which is, of course, a relevant point. And I always tell them that there is a commentary in my story, and it's important to talk about it, even though that some people might not understand it. But very interesting for me is the fact that in Western Europe, people are way, way, way more interested in this film than in the Eastern or Central Europe. Maybe it's because the problem is there in real all around them, and people in the West still might consider it something like a possible future scenario, and or I don't know, but it's kind of disappointing to see like empty cinemas in I don't know, in Romania or Croatia, even though, you know, it's relevant for them more than to people maybe in England. But still I see that the difference in the interest of the audience in the West and East is tremendous.
I'm fascinated by it, especially because it seems to relate to the fact that, you know, you said the commentary is there, but some people didn't understand it. And I guess it's also because reading films, sometimes for some people, not talking about nations in general, but just for some people, is a little bit harder. They may need to be spoon-fed that commentary sometimes, a voice saying, these people are terrible or these people are good.
Or maybe they don't even need it, because even though the people that told me that they are scared that it might look like a propaganda for somebody, they told me that themselves, they were kind of scared and astonished by what they saw. So it's... So I don't know what to take away out of that.
Well, all right, so I'm going to end it there, because otherwise I would just keep asking questions and you would never leave. But thank you so much for talking with us. It's a great pleasure.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
So once again, I remind our listeners that the film is called When the War Comes, and that this is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.